Yo, Parish Orphans and Retrogrades, happy new week. Late February, almost March. We're into Lent. Easter's not too far away, and it is Tuesday, February the 28th. The 27th. Every time I try to read the date, I'm one ahead. So I knew it was the second to last day. This is a leap year, the year of our Lord, AD 2024. And we are a mere 3 days outside of March, fast January and February this year, as we head into an election year with lots happening. Oh, so much is happening. One of the things that's going to happen later this year is the extraordinary blockbuster, What a Woman Is. And I've debuted for you the short trailer on that thing. I think maybe should we just run that back today? Let's play that. What a Woman Is. Look for this in fall of this year, before the election, hopefully.
No one is happy until they live in accordance with the natural law. And yet there seems to be nothing more dangerous than to describe what a woman truly is and ought to be. But let's give it a shot.
So look for that in fall of this year. Also, please, 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 Parish Orphans Retrogrades out there, like this show, subscribe, leave a comment. I like cookies is fine. Click the notification bell. We're happy to be at 50,000 subscribers, but we're now inching toward the next goal, which is 100,000, and it means a lot to the show to get toward that goal. A lot of people say to me, this program needs to hit that goal because it's a unique perspective that we bring. It's a perspective that is not strictly speaking Catholic. There's a huge cultural dimension to the show. You see that with the products like Ask Your Husband, Case for Patriarchy, What a Woman Is. You're going to get a big dose of that. Most important cultural issue. We also give church analysis, and I just get sick of it. And I've been talking about that, but that doesn't mean when I stand down on a story like the one that I'm going to be talking about today, that I won't eventually get to it. I just decided at a certain point, sometimes there will be a story in the church, if it's a big papal story or a big story related to the October Synod, then I'll probably be all over it. But if it's something like the one I'm about to introduce, and I'll say, let me lay back in the pocket and, you know, give you an update. Once everyone's already kind of taken a first crack at this thing, this is the perfect issue to do so. The fail last week by Cardinal Dolan, Archdiocese of New York, insofar as they allowed the opening of St. Patrick's Cathedral, some argue the finest church in America, in the Americas, to be used in what became a giant flaming Skittles rollerblade convention for the ostensible purposes of a funeral, the funeral of a man named Cecilia Gentili, a known rollerblader, Transformers activist who founded the Transformers Equity Consulting Group. The topic of much conversation lately, I'm reading an article by Judy Brown called Cardinal Dolan's Epic Fail. Topic of much conversation lately has been the recent funeral that took place in St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. The funeral has led to heated discussion. Cardinal Dolan, who presides over the Archdiocese of New York, said that nobody knew the background of the person who died and whose funeral was held in the cathedral. This was a man named Cecilia Gentile. It occurs to us, Judy Brown writes, that the reputation of Gentile preceded him and that there is little doubt that the cardinal knew who this person was. He's been contradicted by officials from his own diocese and the actions of officials of his own archdiocese, which testified to the idea that they definitely knew who it was. Of course they did. I'll show you why I say that in a few moments. But what is certain is that the events of that day bred controversy within the Catholic community. According to a New York Post article, those who put together the funeral for former sex worker Cecilia Gentile broke state law by duping the famed church into holding the service, wrote Brian Birch, president of Catholic Vote, in a letter to New York Attorney General Letitia James. Now, as I'm not a New Yorker, but any New Yorker will tell you that this prized church is the would-be site for any faithful Catholic's funeral. I mean, like anyone that attends church regularly would want a funeral, a funerary proceeding there at St. Pat's. No one could get this. You understand. Not just anyone could get this. There are several probably elite, prominent Catholics, political, cultural figures, wealthy private figures who could not wrangle for themselves a funerary proceeding at St. Patrick's Cathedral. So whether or not, leave aside for a brief moment, whether or not Cardinal Dolan knew who this Cecilia was. We're going to talk about the name Cecilia as regards Saint Cecilia in a second. There is someone, a couple of rollerbladers came up and started saying that Saint Cecilia was a whore and was queen of whores. But okay, leave that aside for a second. Did Cardinal Dolan know? Of course. Of course he knew. Yeah, did you want to say something, Steph? I want to make a side point before you go.
Do we have his actual name?
I mean,
his God-given name.
His last name is Gentile. Mr. Gentile. I there's only so much research. I don't care. I'm not that interested in the overturning of the dysphoria stuff. I know sort of center right conservatives go nuts for this. Anytime I see like a TikTok vid or a Twitter vid or an Instagram account where it's like a normal guy, like red-blooded guy, like flames transformer just by saying the truth about that particular transformer's ontological realities. You're a man. And the internet, you know, the center-right internet erupts into standing ovation. I'm like, can we start at some point in my lifetime? I mean, maybe it'll have to be what a woman is. Return to videos where we leave aside that stuff. That's not really that exciting. Where a man, an old school, crusty New Yorker is talking to like a woman who's running for president, or a woman who's a lecturer at the college, or a woman who's sweeping the street, or a woman who's playing in the WNBA. It's like, can you just go home? Can you just go home? You're not a man. Right? That would be really based. I'm sick of conservatives acting like this transformer stuff, anti-transformer stuff is like a really cutting edge. It's not. I that doesn't excite me at all. To see an old crusty New Yorker telling this confused person, a man's a man, a woman's a woman. I want them to be telling the 99% of the women they interact with out on the street, hey, will you go home? You're not a man. Go home. All right, that's a side issue. Because today the topic is, in fact, the Transformers funeral that took place at St. Pat's. And, you know, now that little side screed is done. I was just making the point that whether or not Cardinal Dolan knew the identity of Mr. Gentile, who was being eulogized, if you call it that, with in this rollerblading phantasmagoria of spectacle that took place after Mr. Gentile died on February the 6th. What was the actual date of the funeral, Steph? Would you grab that for me? Please. Thanks. I meant to look that up in the last minute. The guy died on February the 6th, but the funeral was just last week, maybe late the week before. We'll get you a date in a second. But they definitely knew.
Six days ago.
Yeah. Whether or not the identity of the guy and his whole biographical history was available to the archdiocese, what was certainly known was a lot more than that. Was the idea that, look, this will be a big spectacle. Had to be known because they don't just let anyone have a funeral at St. Pat's. I guess it's a simple enough point. I just want to... I was listening to John Henry Weston's LifeSite podcast, and he did a good job. And I'm going to play a pretty long clip and respond to some passages by Liz Yor, Father Charles Murr, and fourth gentleman, whose name's escaping me, and of course, John Henry Weston. And these are all people that are pretty, pretty identically aligned with where I'm at in ecclesial politics, right? None of them are rad trads. All of them are basically just like, when are you going to deliver the church, O Lord? The Francis Pontificate is just catastrophe after catastrophe. And this probably means something large is on the way. But I agree with all of them, but even these not center right, far right wing Catholics that do not pull punches get cowed into, and I think I'm friends with Father Murr. If I had him on the phone, I think I would make this critique and I'd say, I think he'd say, yeah, you're right. I would bet $100 he would if I had him on the phone line. He'd be like, yeah, you're right. We all get cowed, even far right Catholics, into talking about the priest who presided over this catastrophe, who has a another Irish last name. What is it? Buchanan or something?
I just saw it.
Yeah, I keep seeing it. I'm like Dolan, Buchanan, whatever this guy's name is. We talk about, it's like we allow ourselves to talk about the priest as if, well, he's definitely in on it. But then we make that jump to bishop, archbishop, cardinal, and we play this bizarre game that they're less responsible than the grunt parish priest. That's not how any organization is structured. And it's not structured that way precisely because responsibility follows scienter, knowledge. And it follows some other, you know, discretionary authority. Knowledge, scienter is based on discretionary authority. Responsibility follows knowledge and discretionary authority. So it's not, why do we naturally flip into this mode where we talk about, well, Cardinal Dolan is guilty of being politically correct and not intervening enough. Whereas this priest, whatever his name is, let's just call him Buchanan, who is presiding at Mr. Gentile's rollerblade fest of a funeral. The mass was stopped. Someone rushed in and stopped the mass. I'm a relatively big guy, and I'm sitting at an L desk, and I'm always knocking shit over here. I have big elbows. I don't know what my wingspan. What is my wingspan? Almost 6'6", and it's like I'm knocking stuff over at an L desk. I'm not a guy who should be seated at an L desk. I think I have a 6'5" wingspan, but anyway. Someone rushed in from the archdiocese and did, in fact, have scienter knowledge that this needs to be downgraded from a mass to just a funerary rite, you know. So the Eucharist should not be dispensed. There shouldn't be a consecration. I think the tabernacle lamp was lit. So all this happened in front of Jesus. I have thoughts on that too that might be different. I have a lot of thoughts on this that might be unique. But as for the way that we're sort of cowed, not by anyone in particular, just by the dictates of the faith, into talking about, well, Cardinal Dolan, he's being politically correct here, but the priest was actually going along with the ceremony, the one presiding over it. He's even worse. We have to stop that way of thinking. If we believe in pyramidal hierarchy, more glory at the top, more authority at the top, then we have to, Catholics, parish orphans, retrogrades, start talking about the tippy top of the pyramid, which of course is the pontiff, as having the most blame as well. With credit comes blame. With benefit comes burden. If there's the most benefit, then it's because the most burden is risked by having a position of authority. The famous saying in business is, when you're in management, everything's your fault. And that is said unfairly to middle managers by corporate all across this company. And it's said in context, people out there who work for a living are nodding their head. Middle managers are told this in a context where they legitimately don't always have she and tear, the knowledge. And they'll be told, as they're being chastised for the misdeeds of that were well out of their knowledge, well out of their sight, by corporate, well, you should have known. How should I have known? We don't know how you should have known. You just should have known. In the Catholic Church, even minds as great as John Henry Weston, myself, I'll throw myself in there, because if I was on this panel with them, and I could well have been, because we agree about this stuff strongly. Liz Yore, Father Murr, the other guy whose name I'm forgetting, I probably would have done it too. It's just sort of the force of our faith resting on our chest, sitting on our chest, like, I can't breathe when I'm in that situation. And now I look at it, I'm going to play you a big clip, a long clip, like a 9 or 10 minute clip from this. They had a lot of great analysis, mostly great analysis. But it would happen to me too, probably, if I were in that setting where you start slipping into the context where in, you know, the most that a guy with a red hat, a cardinal, could have done is being politically incorrect or maybe a little negligent. Instead of assuming he has she and Terry and discretionary authority, he's probably the one that really wanted all this to happen, which is always the case. That's always what we should be assuming. When you're in management, everything is your fault. And it's not simply in the sense that a middle manager is blamed for everything by corporate as the patsy. That's actually unfair. The Catholic cardinals and archbishops over their dioceses know all the important stuff that's going on. They know, they're the ones who are guaranteeing, they're the guarantors of the fact that the only people who can get funerals at their most celebrated churches are always the rollerblader crowd who come in there, are desecrating our saints. I was going to play it, and I'm not particularly pearl clutching about this stuff, but they're calling Saint Cecilia the mother of all whores. That might be in the clip I grabbed. It might not. I forget. I have a lot of different points to make today. So they come in, and you know, you read this article that I'm reading from that just came out today, and
Father Doherty.
Doherty. All right. Yeah, Irish. You know. The old potato Doherty. Okay, so he Father Doherty was the presider. He opens up, he says, oh, this is more than we usually get aside from Easter Mass. And he's like, this is great. Cardinal Dolan called him a hero. Doherty and Dolan and Buchanan and all these Irishmen. He called him a hero after the fact. And, you know, he's also covered his ribs saying no one knew the background. So they come in. Father Doherty is saying, oh, this is great. You know, he's really happy. He sees what they're all doing. They're all in their leather and feathers, and literally, and they're carrying on, you know the way they carry on. I mean, not all of you guys are from Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York, but you know, you've seen enough movies. You know what they do. You know how they act. And he's really pleased. He's like, this is great. This is so great. You guys are, that you're so, I forget exactly what quotation he makes, but he's like, this is such a great big crowd. What good energy. If I had to paraphrase, this is what he says. This is the man Dolan called a hero. And so we're just kind of left in the wake. We, the Catholics, who should be history's great winners, because we have the one true faith, time and again, we're the losers. And I want to suggest, I want to submit to you today that it's not because of them. It's because of us. It's not them, it's us. Like Tom Hanks tells his neighbor in The Burbs, it's us. It's the pathetic loser attitude that everyone gets cowed into. You know, instead of saying, look, these people are our enemy. Pray for them. But mark them as your enemy. And just say, no, we're not letting you in our church. We'll pray for you. No, we won't help you out. We won't help out your political lobby. We will cripple it at every potential chance. We'll pray for you. We'll pray for your conversion. That's all we can do. If the people in those towns won't hear you, Jesus told the apostles, move on to the next town and strike the dust from your sandal. Kick it off. Loving your enemy doesn't mean you let the enemy at the gate in. And like bend over for them, especially not this crowd. That's not what you do. That's not loving your enemy. Not that kind of erotic love. And I think just Catholics, through the extreme outstripping of Catholic manhood, and probably worse than any other sect of Christianity, you have, screeching women running households. Catholicism's the worst infiltrated. And having the church run by, there's no other way to say it, but they're not kings or princes. They're queens or princesses who run the Catholic Church. This is the nail in the coffin, right? If you didn't know it before, the Catholic Church is run by a queenly princess lobby. So in the one patriarchy, the higher, the clerical patriarchy, it's run by queens and princesses, the cardinals and the archbishops. And in the household patriarchy, which is straight men, theoretically, dysphoria reigns as well, because Catholic men are ruled by their wives. Now, I'm not saying this doesn't exist in Protestant American Christianity or Orthodox American Christianity, but it's definitely the worst in Catholicism. I think it might be worse than in secular households. And it's no better in trad households than Novus Ordo households. So there's no second class citizenry here. I know people of all Catholic persuasion. And they're all, 99% of them are estrogenic. Households run by women. Catholic Twitter is run by women. Women screeching at everyone all day long. So we have both of the prongs of the bifurcated patriarchy that is Christendom, the clerical patriarchy. It's dysphoric because of all the rollerblading that happens there. And it's dysphoric at the level of the lower prong, the household laity prong of patriarchs, because it's essentially women patriarchs. There's no such thing as matriarchy, but they're women patriarchs, women behind the throne of each household for 99% of the households. So it's our problem. It's our fault. It really is. And I know, you know, there's probably a higher portion share of retrogrades and parish orphans that aren't comprised of this sort of household. But I'm just saying, you can't really complain that you get desecratory, rollerblading, funerary proceedings where our holy saints like Saint Cecilia, I mean, she's fine. We don't like to see her desecrated, though. She's in a better place than we are. But this really makes my blood boil to see this rollerblader up there talking about her the way he was. I don't like it. And when you guys get mad too, I know you get mad. Even if you hail from a dysphoric household, this makes you mad too, as it should. I'm just saying the blame is in our clerical patriarchy, queens and princesses mostly, and our household patriarchy are, you know, queens behind the kings. So it's all dysphoric. So when you see something that's happening on a wider scale that's making it to Fox News or Breitbart or OAN or whatever, secular news outlets, and they're like, well, last week, 6 days ago, I guess that would be last Wednesday, at St. Patrick's, this grand spectacle, devastating grand spectacle on a large scale, really embarrassed the Catholic Church and desecrated the holy objects therein and the names of the saints that were uttered by these foul breaths. We get mad, but we should be mad at ourselves.
Were you interested in seeing like the list of the things that were specifically happening at the Mass or no?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Let's have it. We'll codify. Okay. Yeah.
Did you want to read?
Yeah, I'll thanks, Debbie. So, I know everyone's already covered this, so I know you're mad. I know you're already mad. The priest celebrant consistently used feminine pronouns for Gentili. This is Doherty, the potato man, Irish man, describing the deceased as our sister. This was a man, Mr. Gentili. And using a name apart from Gentili's baptismal name. Good list here, Steffi. Thanks for getting this. The steps to the sanctuary were decorated by attendees with rollerblading-themed flags and similar items. The participants celebrated Gentili, who had taken on this imaginary play name, Cecilia, as a whore, a puta, and as the mother of whores in a manner that seemed to glamorize prostitution. Now, in the eulogy I heard, they were calling the man Gentili. It was unclear whether they were referring to his fake name Cecilia or Saint Cecilia, because they said Saint Cecilia. But they said all this from the lectern. The intercessory prayers included a call for gender-affirming health care. The prayers to the Blessed Virgin Mary were interrupted with the participant shouting Ave Cecilia over the Ave Maria and dancing around the deceased's casket. The words of remembrance were offered by the deceased's male partner, which focused on their union, and by a transgender person who referred to girls like me from the cathedral's pulpit. So a man who said that. I mean, I know this stuff makes a lot of you guys really mad. I want to make a kind of broader point at the end. Some words of remembrance focused on political advocacy. Oh, of course. Well, duh. You know? And people are like, no! That happened? A transgender person could be seen. I don't know why they keep saying that. Is it just a man seen kissing a man in the church's sanctuary while the words of remembrance were offered? The liturgy included a raucous chanting and interruptions at various times. Of course, the deceased was frequently celebrated as a saint during the liturgy. Okay. Yeah, there's, I'm seeing the kiss. All right. I'm skipping lunch. Okay. So I know you guys love to get worked up about this. This is a big deal. It's a huge deal. And I want to play for you swaths of the panel from the LifeSite podcast, who did a really good job. I just want to point some things out. But the dysphoria is real, man. It's in most households. Whether or not this kind of thing is happening, because New York is the most liberal city in the United States. We are the Leviathan now. I have to tell my kids, look, we started out with a real mission, our country, but our country is evil now. It's run by evil people. It's run by an evil lobby. Its allies are evil. That's the political reality. It's the geopolitical reality. And you should tell your kids that too. It did really have quite a founding, quite a shot, but it was hijacked sometime around Leo XIII, Pius X, a little bit thereafter, definitely by World War II. And you guys are all worked up about this, and so am I. But unless we effect a sea change among Catholics, this will keep happening. It's just, there'll be a new thing like this in a month or 2 months. First off, you have to consider hatred. You should reconsider hatred. Your enemies, what it is, what it isn't. To mark someone as an enemy, I'm never going to aid them aside from prayer, is not hatred. So, it's not hatred. Just saying, look, these are my enemies. Aside from praying for them, I will do everything I can to debilitate them and to scare up a debilitating political and cultural lobby against them. And I'm going to talk about them as such. Jesus didn't say you have to sound like you love your enemies. He said you have to love them. Loving them means willing their good, their final good. This means remember your enemies at prayer at night, but leave it there. That's where you prove whether are you loving your enemies or are you praying for your enemies. Are you praying for their conversion? They'll join our side. That would be awesome. You're never going to go wrong, like really getting into hoping that, having fantasies about, wow, we've made some of the greatest saints out of the greatest sinners. Look at St. Paul. But leave it there. Stop talking about unconverted enemies as if they're already converted. And this kind, and I know, and I probably mean this with a stricter scrutiny than even other really far right Catholics. We have to talk as if we should talk to one another as if Jesus didn't say this. Doesn't mean he didn't. When you say your rosary or your devotional, your prayers at night, pray for your enemies. Try to remember them every night. Mean it, because the Lord ponders the heart. But so that's first rule, number one. We have to affect a discourse where we put ourselves in the position to be politically triumphant. We have to be like, look, they talk like they hate us, and they do because they're of the devil, but we should at least be able to counteract that and make moves corresponding. And the big number two takeaway, and then I'm going to play this thing, is stop saying things like this. This is from this article today. It is astounding to read Cardinal Dolan's response spoken during a podcast. I'm going to play for you this. We didn't know the background. We don't do FBI checks on people who want to be buried. He's being sarcastic. It is not astounding to read Cardinal Dolan's response unless you've been in a coma the last 30 years, or at least the last 10 years. It's not astounding. Cardinal Dolan is one of them. You should assume that most cardinals are one of them. The false gospel bringers. stop being astounded. He's Cardinal Dolan. This is what I'm sick of. Just stop saying, oh, this is astounding. It would be astounding. Okay, what would astound me is to read a passage from him just being honest. Look, these are my people. These are who I care about. And this is why they got to use St. Patrick's Cathedral for a funeral, whereas no good Catholic could, no trad Catholic could ever receive this benefit. That would be an astounding honesty. And I'd be like, well, I know that's his view. He's one of them. Most of the cardinals are. But it's not astounding to hear the political doublespeak. That's just what he does, how they work, how the world operates, how the system continues to be turned by the world, or the world by the system, I guess. It's not astounding. Stop saying things like this. Faithful Catholics, I don't know even who I'm addressing. Just sensible people. It's not astounding at all. The only thing that would astound me is someone being honest, okay? And it's an easy tone of voice to slip into when you're speaking publicly, because it's like, oh, geez, I don't want to say, even I'm doing it right now. I don't want to say something publicly I can't take back. But at the same time, I do want to tone up to the line and talk a little bit how I talk, mostly how I talk, behind my own doors. I want to be honest about that. Sometimes I might go too far behind closed doors, and I might confess that semi-regularly, maybe. But, and I don't want to make one of those slips publicly, but I want to be right there at the threshold between being really, really honest, not creating extra scandal or any of that, and going too far. And here's the thing, the line's a lot further along, a lot more extreme than you guys all think. People are not pushing the envelope. If you think it's astounding that Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who is Archbishop of New York, has allowed them into the parades, has at least 10 rollerblader-specific churches in New York City alone, 10 plus. Those are just the ones John Henry Weston found on a search. Operates at the highest levels of the church. Is considered of all American prelates, maybe a little bit papabile. He could be Pope. That's because he's one of them. There is a deep state. Duh. There's a deep church. If you're a good guy and you happen to have somehow snuck into the episcopate, then you ought to be either wrenched into silence, depending on temperament, more like Cardinal Burke, or you're a little less silent, and like Bishop Strickland, you're just outcasted. What I would consistently hear over the last 6 years is that Bishop Strickland, straight guy, just a straight, holy, straight shooter from Texas. Clearly, you just could tell. It's like Mel Gibson when he said when he went to Hollywood, he's like, do I walk like them? Do I talk like them? You know who them is. He's just sitting alone. Everyone says at USCCB meetings before he got kicked out. I'm going to try playing this in a sec. He's sitting alone at lunch. They don't want to talk to him, and he doesn't want to talk to them. Imagine going to like a rollerblader specific all boys school, and you're the Strickland. Of course, I'm just going to say, look, I'm a bishop. I love my flock. I probably get to interact with some cool, holy, normal people, go and have dinner at some of my favorite parishioners' houses, and I get some normalcy and I get some social interaction there. I'm not going to get it at USCCB, right? That when I lived in California and I would go visit San Francisco, I would, you know, sometimes go, hey, let's go walk up and down Lombard Street. Let's go visit our friends in San Francisco. It's a beautiful, natural city. But it's ruined. I don't want to talk to people on the street. My kids don't talk to people on the street. Stay close. That's Strickland at USCCB before he was eventually expelled. And of course, he has a different temperament from a Burke. So he can't just stay silent never endingly. And look what ends up happening. Everyone else in the episcopate or the cardinalate, just assume they're one of them. Stop saying we're astounded when the positions of power are clearly shown to be populated by them, the enemy. It's that simple. Stop talking that way. And then, you know, sometimes you talk away and it trains your thinking. Usually your thinking precedes your speaking, hopefully. But sometimes if you just stop talking that way, then you'll stop thinking that way. And then you'll stop going around astounded all the time. If you know the political end, you're going to know the means. People have said this. Someone was interacting with me on Twitter, and it was someone that I think a Pope's planner. And he said, to your credit, you've called what Francis is doing rather astoundingly. I'll give you credit. Like, how? How did you do that? I'm like, if you know the political end, it's relatively easy to pretend I'm him and to cook up what political means would I use to effectuate the same end. It's simple. That's why it's a fact. This is as good as a fact. We're getting the female deacon equivalent before October. And that's why I know the specifics. There's some news about this Liz Yor even mentions. The effectuation of this will have something to do with ambiguous, you know, placing of the hands of the bishop on a male deacon, the ladies. It'll be some bullshit that's cooked up the same way that they cooked up Amoris Laetitia. And they're like, what's a way where we can do it, but it'll look like we didn't do it. People will argue about it, and then I'll swoop in and say it. Same thing with the direct causal connection between fiducia supplicans and the kind of political advocacy that represents, and what happened at St. Patrick's Cathedral last Wednesday. Oh, he did it. He didn't do it. He is giving SS unions advocacy, and he's giving them a brand new kind of blessing that was outlawed in the church. No, he's not. Yes, he did. No, he's not. Okay, then eventually they're just like, all right, now they're getting funerals. 2020, spring, in Francesco, he says they need global laws that enable them to get civil unions. Okay, so it's all making a lot of sense. I'm not Nostradamus. It's just these are the goals. They were told to us, intoned by Cardinal Walter Brandmuller. Here are the goals of the Sankt Gallen agenda. Francis is a plant. Doesn't mean he's not real pope. Every time I have on Ed Maz or Patrick Coffin, like I did last week, I get pressure from some guys that are like, I thought you were with us. Will later be rightly regarded as pseudo-doctrines if he turns out to be an anti-pope. They won't as cleanly be regarded as pseudo-doctrines if he doesn't turn out to be an anti-pope. So I know all that. But I'm like, in terms of the political expediency of our day, the proposition stood for, he's a plant, and we know his agenda, what he's going to try to do, because whether someone's a pope or an anti-pope that everyone believed and most everyone believed in, if he has to sneak through an agenda that shouldn't be able to be snuck through in the Roman Catholic Church, given our commitment to doctrinal non-contradiction, he's going to have to do pretty much follow one course, one campaign path. You're going to do female deacons. There's pretty much only one way to do it. Now, there's 1,000 ways to skin that cat. But he's pretty much, when I give you guys predictions, here's what he's going to do. They're broad enough to be like, look, it's going to play on ambiguity, but it's going to ultimately be definitive. Well, what does that look like? Ambiguous, but definitive. I don't know. Look at Amoris Laetitia's 8th chapter, man. It's a playbook. Look at Fiducia Supplicans. Look at the Eugenio Scalfari 11 interviews. Ambiguous, but definitive. What do you mean definitive? Well, he said some horrible, horrible shit. He said some seriously, seriously messed up shit. He said Jesus wasn't God while he was man, according to Scalfari. We deny that. Nope, he didn't. the Vatican came out the next day and said, all Scalfari was doing was reconstructing what he heard as best as he could. That's not a repudiation. That's a confirmation. Okay? So it's definitive. It's definitively non-denunciatory. That's a kind of definitiveness. On February the 18th, 2016, right before Amoris Laetitia came out, Francis said, well, Zika virus, dubious, ambiguous circumstances, enables Catholics to use contraception. The next day, Vatican mouthpiece came out and definitively said about that ambiguity, yeah, he meant condoms, and he did mean it. But it's ambiguous because it's, you know, only couples in South America with Zika virus. It's ambiguous but definitive. All right, let me play for you. So that's how I'm doing it, by the way. I'm like to be a checkers player, not a chess player. This is how I keep calling Francis's shots. It's not hard. It's really not. Okay, so this is an interview held by this panel with a woman who accosted Cardinal Dolan about four days after the heinous funerary, wasn't a mass, proceeding took place. And she tells you what he said and what she said and the way he was gaslighting her. And again, people are like, this is astounding. It's not astounding. This is what they do when you ask the men, the princesses who run the church, why did you let this anti-Catholic political lobby run the show? And they're like, they're kind of like, you kind of don't blame them. They're like, dude, I am a princess. I'm a queen of the Catholic Church. These are my people. Now, I can't say this to you, but I almost get sympathetic because, like, when right-wing but sort of normie-acting right-wing Catholics are like, Cardinal Dolan, why would you do this? It's like, do you not get it? He's one of them. I'm not sympathetic to him. I'm more sympathetic to her. But the dumb line of questioning makes me sound almost sympathetic. There's nothing for him to say. This is who I am, lady. I don't know how he identifies. I just mean, this is my political lobby. Why do you think I am the freaking Cardinal of New York? Archbishop Cardinal of New York. You don't get that way by being Bishop Strickland or Athanasius Schneider. No, that's not how the world works. Do conservatives need this explained? I don't get it sometimes, guys. Anyway, I do appreciate that she asked the question, but it's funny because there's nothing for these guys to say. Do you not know who I am?
Sacrilege and blasphemy and disrespect that happened at this funeral. And he...
Sorry.
So forth. And I didn't think that was really the appropriate place. I never liked socializing in the church anyway after Mass.
She's saying, look, I saw him at a Mass at my church 4 days after the big rollerblading fest at St. Pat's last Wednesday. And I waited for him outside the church because I don't like talking, you know, where the tabernacle lamps lit, but he didn't come out. So I had to go accost him in the church.
It always bothers me. So I had gone outside in front to wait for him to ask him some questions after he exited so as not to be doing that inside, but he never came out. So I went back in and got sort of at the end of the line. And then when it came my turn to speak with him, I asked Cardinal Dolan, I said, first of all, thank you for coming here. And then I said, when is the Mass of reparation for that horrible sacrilege and blasphemy and disrespect that happened at this funeral? And he leaned over and whispered in my ear, which I thought was kind of strange. I thought, well, why is he doing this? And so he whispered in my ear and said, you know, I think it's already happened. And they did it on the QT so as not to have more protesters. The whole answer to me seemed incredibly bizarre. I almost didn't know what to say.
So you heard that?
Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't tell if you could hear through your headphones.
Yeah.
So this goodly lady, sorry, I don't have her on the third line, the name. And as you all know, I forget names in a moment's notice. I remember dates, places, ideas, but names evade me. She asked him, well, when is the massive reparation going to be held? It was a big public desecration. It should be a big public reparation of that desecration. And he Cardinal Dolan, leans over in the mass and he whispers to her, they did it on the QT. I think it's already happened. And
you couldn't even say it out loud.
And she, well, yeah, he can't say it out loud. Of course, but of course. So, and she's saying she thinks this is strange. Why would that be strange? What would be strange is if he's like, yeah, it's happening tomorrow. Tell everyone. We're putting it on the news. We're going to condemn all these people. You'd be like, well, that's not Cardinal Timothy Dolan. Why would it be strange? If Joe Biden said, look, I'm going to eliminate all the abortion centers in America and I'm going to cut taxes for the upper middle class and I'm going to, you know, end DEI, that would be strange. It's not strange if Joe Biden takes the opposite view. So I think some of these people that might be have a harder core position on liturgy than even me. I don't like the Novus Ordo at all. I think it's awful. But I don't know. John Henry Weston might be more, I don't know, SSPX friendly than me. I'm way further to the right in my assumptions about personnel. I just think they're all bad guys. It doesn't make me leave the faith. I just made a tweet the other day mocking Protestants who try to claim credit for Catholic stuff like building the first hospitals and libraries when it suits them, but the rest of the time saying Catholics aren't Christians. Look, if you're proud of what Christendom did, it's all Catholic. And you know, in the eastern parts of the Mediterranean, there is, you know, real early libraries from Orthodox as well, but it's not Protestant. I'm a Catholic triumphalist when it comes to Western civilization and our culture. I'm not a whit triumphalistic about who runs the show. It's all queens and princesses. If someone's a bishop, I'm assuming that about them until they've shown me otherwise, and very few of them have. And it's very strange to sit around and hear right-wing people who do get it, this woman's intelligent, say it was strange. Cardinal Dolan, under his breath, said, we already did it. We want to keep it on the QT. Well, yes, because their political lobby is rollerblader. He's a New York leader. Yeah, he's a leader in the church, but he's a leader in New York that's thriving. He's not a good guy. He's one of them.
And so he whispered in my ear and said, you know, I think it's already happened. And they did it on the QT so as not to have more protesters. The whole answer to me seemed incredibly bizarre. I almost didn't know what to say.
It's bizarre. You thought that's bizarre. That's what I would have been expecting. Okay.
It's
very normal.
He was whispering it. And second, the fact that this thing was very public, it was all over the news. I thought the reparation should be public too. And there were so many, I had so many friends who wanted to participate and assist at that mass and be.
But nice lady who I'm not trying to be mean to or whatever. The forces by which the reparation was forced to be private are the self-same forces that made there be a need for the massive reparation in the first place. In other words, the abiding political lobby in the Roman Catholic Church, queens and princesses, get to hold funerals like this by the same power which makes the contrapositive the case, which makes reparative forces, which boldly declare that this was wrong for this to have happened, to have to happen on the QT. That's not strange. That's consistent. It's like when Homer tells Marge, he's like, first you told me you didn't want me to do this. Now that I went ahead and did it, you asked me to disown it. Make up your mind. It's like, no, those are consistent. When are even very right-wing Catholics going to get their mind around this? wrap your head around it. It's very simple. The bad guys run the church all the way to the very tippy top. With a few exceptions of Benedict-made cardinals, two or maybe three, and Benedict-made bishops, maybe a few more than that, they're all like they're the others. They're the bad guys. They can't be trusted. Meaning, if bad guys are in power, only bad stuff should be expected to follow, to happen.
And then I said something to the effect of, oh, well, I think a lot of people are going to be very wounded by that because they were looking forward to, and he sort of scolded me. He said, well, every mass is a mass of reparation. That took, I mean, of course it is, but that took me a little bit aback too. And I didn't want to argue with him, but it's just, his responses seemed so strange to me. And then I moved on and I said, well, what about.
It's like this nice, probably holy, good lady has just been in a coma for 20 years. You know what I mean, Steph? I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but it's so strange that this is strange to her. You accost Cardinal Dolan, who wanted this to happen and is lying about wanting it to happen, and everyone knows he's lying about wanting it to happen because he has to. You accost him, why'd you let this happen? Shouldn't good Catholic stuff happen in the church? No, not the last 60 years. Good Catholic stuff does not happen according to the druthers of the people that have run the church for the last 60 years. That's not how it's been. I've been alive for four decades of it. This lady looks like she's been alive for probably all six decades of it, if I had to venture a guess. How am I like not 20 years behind you, miss? How am I 20 years ahead of you in terms of molding my expectations to meet the political and the ecclesiological realities? I don't get it. This is what they do when you accost them. In my nearby church, the pastor, another potato Irishman, said Jesus was wrong about forbidding divorce categorically. If he lived in our day, he'd understand. I accosted him. I have a recording of this still. And he said, don't go back to church there. Not that I want to, but I can't make the two-hour drive to New Orleans every week, or I won't. Maybe I'm lazy, whatever. This is just what happens. I wasn't surprised. I knew I had to go confront him. I didn't really want to do it. Steph gets a kick out of it when I do. But I'm like, I'll record it for your entertainment. But like, I'm not always in the mood to do that shit, man. But you have to. And no, I wasn't surprised that he gave me the, well, it's, you know, here's what I meant. It's the exact same pattern. First, they'll try to say something to kind of palliate you. Like he at first did to her. Well, we're having the reparative mass here. At first he told me, he was like, well, all I meant was this. There's a lot of divorcees here. I was like, well, I don't care. Yeah, divorcees are like the second leading lobby group in the church behind the rollerbladers. But I don't care about that. And then he tried to gaslight me. He was like, well, technically, these are all annulments. Just like he said to her, well, technically, all masses are restorative. And then the third step is always, I turned my back on you. I'm going. He left the room on me. He beat it, just like what you're about to hear from her. I wasn't surprised, though. I knew it was coming. Why is this lady so surprised?
The priest who presided over this whole thing, Father Doherty, and I was about to ask specific questions, such as he referred to the deceased, who was a man, as a she. He said, he gave assurances that this person was in heaven. I thought that was me. But I didn't even get to that because I said, what about Father Doherty? And he cut me off and said, he's a hero. And I said, what? He said, yes, he's a hero. He stopped the mass. And I said, no. And I'd forgotten it wasn't a mass. It was just a service. But he said, he stopped the mass. And I said, no, he didn't. I said, then I became a little argumentative. And I said, he didn't stop it. It went on. I said, I watched the whole thing. It was horrendous. And he said, well, then it went on without him. And he turned away from me and started posing for pictures with kids. And I couldn't ask any more questions.
Well, obviously, from the video testimony, it didn't go on without him. He was very much part of it.
You recognize the voice of John Henry West in there, who kind of brought it back to the facts. He's good at doing that. Now, here's Father Charles Murr.
I heard when I was watching a clip of it, that somebody came up to the priest and said, "You're to go on without a mass," which I've been in that situation, not as dramatic as that one was, but I've been in a situation where I realized that of the 200 people at the funeral mass, there was not one practicing Catholic. Mm. And when you say the Lord be with you, and people stare at you like you've got 10 heads, like what, you know that you're not with people who are practicing Catholics. So I have not gone out with the mass. I simply do a funeral service, right? But in this case, you're dealing with somebody who is publicly an atheist, publicly and proudly a prostitute. And I mean, the whole thing is absurd. It's absurd. Why do you think the cardinal would be afraid to have a mass of reparation, if not an exorcism?
Father Murr, who I love, great analysis. Been on this show. I've been on his show. I wanted to have him call in today because I know we're going to agree 100%. This sounds like a disagreement, but I think he'd just be like, "Yeah, well, you're right. You're right." He's not afraid, Father. I know you agree with me. If you rethink it, Cardinal Dolan's not afraid to have the public mass of reparation. He's pretending he's afraid as a false reason, pretext, alibi for why he won't have the big mass. He doesn't want the big public return force, return volley on what happened. He wants the one-sided vector force moving the rollerbladers agenda forward. You see? He wants that. It doesn't suit his political alliances to have a big public mass back. And all I'm suggesting is that when we say, "Oh, he's afraid," sometimes I think people that are that age, you know, 55, 65, 75, they think that they're getting him, Cardinal Dolan, by saying, "Oh, he's afraid." It's much worse than being afraid and just politically correct and still probably having mostly finely tuned categories for what's good, what's bad. You know, north is up, south is down. He's not afraid of anything, Cardinal Dolan. He's really not. He's one of them. It's very different. He's acting like the reason, I'm lowering my voice, is because, you know, he'll take it on the chin, the appearance, the blow to the reputation. Oh, he's a little politically cowardly, but he's probably a good guy. That's what enables the church, the Francis Church, to go forward. And people do this more than they do this the most, of course, with Pope Francis. Oh, he's just afraid to stand up to these radicals in the church. Why are we assuming that the grunts run the church and that the boss of the church, the bosses of the dioceses, don't run the dioceses? We ought to assume, given our pyramidal hierarchy, power, this is the nature of power, that the grunts are doing the radical things because the people at top want them to. Why does that put me in my own category of ecclesiological commentators? It's an odd assumption that's been popularized, and it serves the purposes of the Cardinal Dolans or the Pope Francis's of the world. They're like, okay, well, at worst, they can be accused of being a little bit cowardly, not standing up to these powerful church ladies who run the chanceries, the liberal church ladies who are forcing the dioceses to the left politically. That's not how it works. A rising tide raises all boats. The church ladies are hired as liberals. The political lobby of Skittles and rollerblading is enshrined because the people at top hire those people. Personnel is policy. They're not afraid of their own constituents. They run the show. They'll fire you if you're a Bishop Strickland-like priest. They won't fire, I don't know, whoever really arranged this set of blasphemies. They won't. So don't, let's not keep talking that way.
A clip of it that some
couldn't ask any more questions.
Well, obviously from the video.
So here's Murr.
In that situation, not as dramatic as that one was. But I've been in.
All right, we'll skip forward.
They simply do a funeral service, right? But in this case, you're dealing with somebody who is publicly an atheist, publicly and proudly a prostitute. And I mean, the whole thing is absurd. It's absurd. Why do you think the cardinal would be afraid to have a massive reparation, if not an exorcism?
I don't, Father. I don't think he's afraid. He does what he wants, and he's not afraid, Dolan. Unlike us conservatives too often, he's not afraid. He got what he wanted, and he's saying, oh, I just goofed up. I subserved the political advocacy group that I meant to, but I'll say, yes, I accidentally goofed, and I subserved the opposite one, and it was just cowardice, but these people are never-endingly forgiving of that. I say, okay, fine. You should lose your job then. If it's really cowardice, even one instance of that kind of cowardice, you should lose your job. But that's not the truth anyway. He's not a coward, Cardinal Dolan. He's subserving his people.
Why would that be a fear of his, that it be known?
When he said so that the protesters wouldn't come, I thought, well, I mean, first of all, I'm sure the NYPD and all sorts of private security forces would be more than happy to provide security at that mass.
You can be sure of it.
I was just remembering.
I don't think you can be sure of that. I like all these people. The NYPD, man, they're on people. I thought Beerbug did it. The police aren't on your side. Particularly NYPD, LAPD, remember what they were doing a few years ago? They're not the good guys. They're members of the regime. Now, a lot of them might be have private misgivings about being the stormtroopers, but stormtroopers they are. Stop talking like that.
I remember when we went to the first Trump rally in D.C. and the police were standing by, watching as these like peaceful protesters in DC were just being completely destroyed and beaten up, men with families. They're just standing by. And what was really funny too was that we would be marching peacefully and a lot of the conservatives would be clapping for the police and yay police, and the police that were standing on the sidelines were literally rolling their eyes at these people as they're lauding the police's efforts to be there.
Well, and then later that night, the police, the federal police there in D.C. were turning away peaceful right-wing protesters who were like, hey, I'm being followed by a bunch of inner-city thugs, you know, wearing basketball shoes. And they would turn, in some cases, they turned them back into, they're like, no, you have to go that way. You have to go back and confront them, basically. And they got beaten up. And the police wouldn't help them. The police aren't on your side. The kind of presupposition that fertilizes this mode of thought is trusting in authority. Aquinas, who you probably think says, oh, we should always trust in authority. He says, once the regime's bad, they're the bad guys. Which is why Aquinas had the views he did about regime change. The right of revolution, the right of rebellion. Well known, Aquinas is kind of the first major thinker in all political history to political, ideological history of philosophy to say, no, there is a right of rebellion that exists in nature. So, yeah, Aquinas might like political authority more than me, but he means from the beginning when you have a reasonable hope of having a good king or a good aristocracy or a good polity. Once you know you're in a wicked regime that's turned, the good king, the monarchy, is turned into a tyranny, the way Aristotle says in Book 3 of the Politics. The good aristocracy's turned into a wicked oligarchy. The good polity or republic has turned into wicked democracy. Don't expect to find it in agents of the state. All people that are high now in the deep church or the deep state are looking to harm you. So stop saying that NYPD is on our side and would be protecting congregants at a massive reparation from the Skittles rollerbladers.
You're now with people who are practicing Catholics. So I have not gone out with the mass. I simply do a funeral service, right? But in this case, you're dealing with somebody who is publicly an atheist, publicly and proudly.
Skip forward a little.
To have a massive reparation, if not an exorcism. Why would that be a fear of his, that it be known?
When he said so that the protesters wouldn't come, I thought, well, I mean, first of all, I'm sure the NYPD and all sorts of private security forces would be more than happy to provide security at that mass.
You can be sure of it.
I was just remembering on election night of 2020, when there had been various threats of protests and violence, Cardinal Dolan then arranged for tons of private security at every parish in New York to look after every parish, or maybe it wasn't everyone, but it was many of them, in case there were any disruptions on election night. I thought, well, if you'll do it for that, why in the world wouldn't you do it for this?
Wendy, I wanted to ask you, is your
election night was not lavender specific, my Christian sister. Election night is banal relative to the particular constituent ideologies that election night comprises. That's kind of the big game, the Super Bowl. Cardinal Dolan knows he has to, he'll go along with that. Yeah, I'll protect you people from them on election night. But when it comes to the individual topics, issues that animate election night, no. He's on the other team's side.
Sense of that this is
Liz York.
The LGBT, you know, coup d'etat of the church, that they're really pushing their agenda on the Catholic Church, and they chose the most iconic, you know, cathedral in the United States.
It sort of feels that way. I don't know any more than anyone about that, but it certainly felt that way in the level of shock and sorrow and scandal that it caused. Certainly would be commensurate with that. And I would say what makes it even worse to me is the cover-up from the Archdiocese feels almost as bad as the initial crime, because I feel like we're all, as the faithful, being gaslit to say, oh, you know.
Okay, now that's a good thought. This is a good panel here. All people I agree with a lot. The cover-up is part of the original crime, right? Well, same as my Homer Simpson quotation. Marge doesn't want him to do something, and he goes ahead and does it. Then she's mad at him. That's her being consistent. He goes, first you didn't want me to do X. Now I did X, and you're mad at me that I did it. Make up your mind. Make up your mind. Pick a side, Marge. That's what they're saying. They're like, the cover-up is almost as shocking as the original crime. And it's almost worse. I'm like, it's part of it. They're one in the same. He's one of them, people. Your bishop likely is one of them. Your archbishop is likely one of them. The head bishop, archbishop of the church, Francis, is one of them. The Pope. I do tend toward thinking he's actually Pope. I don't know what that means. We'll talk about that in a sec.
Mass is a massive reparation. This was all done in priest of the hero, and why don't you just go on about your way? And I mean, but then I heard an interview that Cardinal Dolan did in the last day or two, and he was sort of chuckling and said, well, we don't do FBI background checks. And I thought, that's not funny. And it's, I feel like there's all these straw men and all these red herrings saying we don't do FBI background checks for funerals. And then his spokesman, Mr. Zwilling, said something like, I'm quite certain everyone who's had a funeral at St. Patrick's is a sinner. Again, that's sort of gaslighting us, and it's a red herring.
It's not a red herring. It is gaslighting. It's the typical UTEP two-step that they use. When you're like, wait, why do divorced and remarried under the Francis Pontificate now get to get communion? You're like, well, it's not a prize for the perfect. Francis's own words. It is gaslighting because it's not a prize for the perfect. The Eucharist is always a prize for the imperfect in a state of sanctifying grace. Funerary mass is not a prize for the perfect. It's a prize for sinners, sinners who died in a state of communion with the church. See the similarity there? And yeah, she's all thrown off by it. And she's like, that's just so weird. It's not weird. It's all, what do you expect? What do you want him to say? He's one of them. And you're addressing him like he's one of us. He's like, lady, do you not get it? It's 2024. The mask is off. Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Palestine. The agenda behind fruit booting and rollerblading and lavender, it's all about, you know, drag queen story hour, right? That's where they're going. This is all Baal worship. Do you not get it? You're addressing me like I'm one of you. You probably should go find Bishop Strickland or Cardinal Burke. You can commiserate there. I'm on their team. I'm going to go over there now. Bye.
And these guys know that this is how you can handle women who are the ones that are confronting these prelates. Because we don't have, we have males in the Catholic Church who are being run over by their wives. They're certainly not going to be the ones that are going to be going up to Cardinal Dolan and saying, cut the crap. I know what you're doing. This requires a public response. This needs to happen right now. Or I'm bringing 50 of my guys to your church tomorrow and we're staging our own protest.
Right.
They don't know how to handle men. They know how to handle good-hearted young or good-hearted women in these situations.
Yeah, Liz Joris, very smart lady. This lady ran for the Congress or something in New York. Another smart lady, but they don't get it. It's still, they're talking way more than Father Murr or John Henry Weston, and it's like, this is the problem. It's like ladies aren't equipped to deal with this stuff. And the men are kind of just listening to the lady. It was her. It wasn't some guy that they're interviewing who addressed the cardinal. I'd be like, cut the crap.
It needs to be a group of dudes.
I'll be here tomorrow. A group
How
of
would he respond?
Men need to travel in packs.
Yeah.
One thing that Islam notes, and my friend Dr. Michael Robillard would always say, men need to travel in packs. Why? Because of anything that comes up.
How would he
a
respond?
A pack of men are there to deal with it.
If five dudes, five good Catholic men walked up to him respectfully and just kind of circled around him, and they're like, no, none of us believe anything you just said. You need to handle this appropriately. That conversation would have gone far differently.
Well, it's now they don't need to. Again, women thinking he's one of them. So all you have to do is say, I know what you're up to. I know who you are, man. Got my eye on you. And yeah, we're going to be I'm going to be bringing lots of men around here. Big dudes who are going to safeguard the church. Now, he'll just call the cops on him because he is one of them. And he'll be like, there are some counter-protesters who threaten violence when that's not what they're threatening. So you don't really need to address him at all. He's just on their team.
Wait. No, one click on Google, and they would have found out who Mr. Gentile was. And there was also indications in some of the statements that they knew the night before the service that this was a prominent transgender activist. But, you know, this gaslighting, we're not entitled to uphold the faith and express our shock and dismay.
I'm not even going to call up a congregation when these people file into the St. Patrick's Cathedral. And Father Doherty looked out at them, and the very first thing he said was, oh, we've never had people this turned out since Easter, sort of applauding fishnets and their incredibly inappropriate attire and the way they were conducting themselves. And
exactly. In fact, let's take a look at that clip right now. You will see that Father Doherty is not only not perturbed, but he's encouraging them. He gives this little joke and they give him a standing ovation. Watch this.
Welcome to St. Patrick's Cathedral. Except on Easter Sunday, we don't really have a crowd that this that is this well turned out, you know?
And they're all laughing, and he's commending them, and we don't have to go all into it. This is just the church in AD 2024. So it's funny because I noted some people that think to be Catholic, you have to Pope-splain, liked my tweet last night about, like, look, the church gave Western civilization, every institution the Catholic Church created. I was responding to a Protestant who said that the Catholic Church, that Christians created hospitals. I was like, no, they're Catholics. I thought you said Christian. Catholics aren't Christian. Protestants might not be Christian, but Catholics are. You normally disagree. So why are you aligning yourself when you want to take credit for lists like this? All right. So there's just so much to say, but there's not. These are good people. I like one of the few Catholic podcasts I listen to semi-regularly is John Henry Weston and LifeSite News, and I get lots of my stories from them, and I like Liz Yore, and I love Father Murr. I mean, I'm not trying. I think these people would all be like, yeah, these are good points. It's hard in groups of 3, 4, 5 to get someone that's like, okay, well, I know we all agree, but I'm not just nodding. Like, when you guys say it's weird that Cardinal Dolan went along with this or responded to this thus and such way, I'm like, it's not weird at all. You need someone saying that stuff. No, it's very normal that he did that. He's one of them. What's weird is that it's 2024 and you guys are assuming that, like, the Catholic Church is still, institutionally, it's still Catholic, but that the leadership in the church over the last, like, 5-6 decades is still really Catholic. It's not, and this is a well-known proposition, and everyone has experienced it microcosmically and macrocosmically. At your little parish, they say Jesus is wrong about divorce, and Francis changes the rules on divorce, and Francis also changed the rules on annulment, and Francis changed the rule macrocosmically on, you know, blessing SS unions, and Francis changed the rule, is going to change the rule. There's going to be women deacons and eventually women priests that aren't, but are, but aren't, but really are. This is the church, and it's only become the church because we cede these positions of authority to the worst of the bad guys. So stop, please. Stop assuming that the seats of authority, Cardinal Dolan, I assure you, is a worse, thicker thief, so to speak, in thicker with the band of thieves than Father Doherty. Father Doherty is a parish priest there. He might be the pastor there at St. Patrick's, so he's probably kind of high up for a parish priest, but he's not as high up as Cardinal Dolan. Why are you guys still assuming that the people in positions of authority are good guys? I just don't get it. The whole church has a different face now, an opposite face, over 5 or 6 decades, because pretty much all of the people in the episcopate and the cardinalate are the bad guys. They're getting what they want. What do you think? In 99% of the cases, 99% of the bishops and cardinals and the pope are good guys. And they have all the power, and they're good guys, and 99% of the other bishops are good guys too. But for some reason, they just keep getting cowed into going along with 1%, like super muscular minority. I think a lot of people are out there like, yeah. And then I'm just asking you, okay, that's not how mathematics works. The reason that 99% of them act like cowardly centrists is because this is the mask you put on when you are toward the nerve center of the opposition force. They're the bad guys. One thing Father Murr said that was particularly good in this short, I have three closing thoughts. He didn't say it in a clip where I had a recording, but it was particularly good. He said the first papal posthumous act after Francis dies is there needs to be a public reparation mass at St. Peter's. Forget St. Patrick's. That's their problem there in New York. I wish them the best. I wish them the best with it. But there needs to be one at St. Peter's, which is kind of all of our all of our church, all Catholics, to exorcise the Pachamama demons from October of 2019. They held a Pachamama worship ceremony. All kinds of fake news saying, no, it wasn't. This is Our Lady of the Amazon. That was fake news. All kinds of lies saying they weren't actually worshipful in the ceremony. Wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. Once all the dust settled, it was Pachamama. They were worshiping Pachamama. It was in Vatican Gardens, and Francis was presiding. Pachamama is a demon goddess. Furious earth mother demon goddess. And they were offering sacrifices to her. This is the true news after all the fake stories settled. Now, there's fake news saying that it was fake news to say this, and that turned out to be the fake news. Vatican has clarified this. No, it was not the Our Lady of the Amazon. Papal spokesperson said that. It was, in fact, Pachamama. What kind of clarity do you need when the Pachamama was thrown into the Tiber River by, what's the man's name? The large man, Steph. Who's the guy?
Tshugyl.
Yeah, you and I have corresponded. Vatican went and got new ones, new demon statues, and put them back in the church. Okay. After saying this is the demon, Pachamama. False goddess. Demon goddess, whatever. That's literally what they did. That's not fake news. I'm not making that up. And Francis is like, I'm sorry that your demon statues were so disrespectfully thrown out of the church. What would Francis say to Jeremiah, the prophet, who kills the 400 idol worshipers? This is very clear. Everyone says the Francis pontificate is marked by ambiguity. It's only a certain kind of ambiguity that is definitive. It's a definitive ambiguity. Second thought, I'm just thinking about it because of Pachamama. I want to point out a new pattern of Pope splainers, whether it's Pachamama or anything. They'll say, well, you know, the only reason Francis looks so bad, because even they'll admit it looks bad, and he's always saying anti-Catholic, demonic type stuff, is because he's kind of the first pope that really held authority, that reigned in a time when we have such immediate access to social media, specifically Twitter. Not true, right? Because press conferences could happen really fast. He said a bunch of what he said that's really, really scandalizing and anti-Catholic in papal pressers. So not even true. But it's funny because what the Pope splainers are doing are assuming really faithlessly that if Twitter existed back then for all the other 265 popes, they'd all have supported commie, Masonic, Skittles, evil, like Francis has. Commie, Masonic, Skittles, evil, all up and down the map. And I wanted to get to some updates on Vatican Masonic relations that Father Murr talked about in the same excellent Life Site podcast. I'd recommend you go listen to it. I like all the upshot of what they're saying. I was just challenging some of their presuppositions. I think they'd be like, yeah, you're right. You're right. This wasn't weird. This is normal. Bad guys act like bad guys. Shooters shoot. Defenders defend. You know, shoot your shot. Do what you do. Cardinal Dolan's one of them. He's not one of us. But the Pope splainers are funny because they sell out all the past popes just to rehabilitate this one by willfully assuming, and they'll intone this, that, you know, if Twitter existed back then all of our popes would sound a lot more like Francis. They'd all be supporting commie, Masonic, Skittles, divorcee, adultery, evil. Yeah, it's only because they didn't have immediate access to Twitter. You know, Leo XIII and Pius X, Pius V, those guys wouldn't have been hardcore Catholic. They would have, if you actually had access to Twitter, then we would have found out Pius V really, really was an ecumenist. He really loved Protestants. He loved Protestantism. He didn't hate heresy at all. Pius X didn't hate the modernists at all. He was actually kind of a modernist if he had Twitter. You ever notice that? Watch out for that. You'll hear it time and time again. The Pope splainers will say, you know, if these guys had social media, you'd know that they were really bad too, like Francis. It's really weird because they're saying that they're offering you a white pill to defend Francis. They're really, it's a black pill. They're dragging all the prior good popes into the mud just to normalize their own chronological bias for the present. Well, I have a chronological bias for the past, which is why I'm not that distressed about Francis. Sometimes I seem like it, but the past is what really matters. And this brings me to my third point. Why do I have this chronological bias for the past? It's not just because I'm a LARPy trad, because I'm not really a LARPy trad. Yeah, I love the True Mass, which is the TLM, though I don't get there as often as I like to. Because I want you to think now, this is my last point, then I'm gonna close out. Aquinas teaches that all appetites and natural functions of a thing are good when ordered properly. Now, I want you to think about this, part of my closing point, in terms of the thing being political office or ecclesiological office. All of the appetites and natural functions of office, let's say a president, are good when they're ordered properly. In other words, functionality should always match telos or goal. So like when Aquinas is talking about the three good types of government, monarchy, aristocracy, republic. He says monarchy is theoretically the best in a vacuum. But when it goes bad, when monarchy becomes its corrupted shadow form, tyranny, it's the worst. And it's the worst precisely because of that which made it the best. Its capacity for immediacy and emergency political action. If you have like a sudden war or a sudden emergency, national emergency or whatever, it's better to have the power in one man's hands. He can act quick. You don't have to assemble, you don't have to rouse Congress or have a vote with the people in a more direct government or even rouse, you know, if it's an aristocracy, five guys. There's one guy who is kind of born ready for this stuff. If it's working well, monarchy's the best. But when it turns bad, it's the worst. And Aquinas says more often than not, monarchy turns into tyranny. So what he said, I'm making this point in a sort of roundabout way. So he says what should really be done going forward is a fourth type of regime, a mixed regime, which takes from each of the three good regimes, monarchy, aristocracy, polity, the best traits, which minimize their worst traits. So this is where you get three branch rule from. A presidency, executive branch is, you know, the allegedly the best of the monarchy. You have one president that can act fast in certain situations, but not in all situations. Most of the time, the real lawmaking power is the Congress, which is allegedly the best of the lawmaking, the rule by many function, you know, republic. And you put the courts in the hands of the aristocracy, the few, the third type, and they overrule, they rule over the interpretive capacity of law. So you're minimizing the weaknesses of aristocracy, you're minimizing the weaknesses of polity, you're minimizing the weakness of the president or the king, and you take what they're good at and you block what's bad about each of them in theory. And that's why we have three branch rule, presidency with a bicameral Congress with a judiciary. That makes a lot of sense. So this is all a long-winded way of closing. The reason that popes don't need that much power, as the papal maximalists are assuming, is because it's not like a republic or even a political monarchy. Scotland's being invaded by the English again, and you need a king with power. All the Pope really needs to do is to safeguard the doctrines of the past that Jesus left. He doesn't really need to modify them or to iterate them. Now, sometimes with like technology or the changing world, you might need to say, okay, well, this moral theology still translates and conforms itself to this fact pattern in such a way, but he's always bringing you back to the past. That's all the Pope needs. It's not, he doesn't have the same circumstantial demands on his prudential decision-making that like a president has. And all of this goes to suggest that I think the Francis pontificate, it's become clear to me, this pontificate was given to us, allowed by God, in order to reassert in a post-Vatican I way, where it's been kind of unclear how much minimalism, how much maximalism does the pontificate stand for, papal minimalism. I think after Pastora Ternis, the main document of Vatican I, which is kind of clear, popes only have this maximal authority only when they speak ex cathedra. I think he really is just a bishop that does have a universal jurisdiction over the disciplines of the church. This is the equivalent of needing immediate political action. Hey, everyone's being weird. I want all the priests to not be tempted to get a girlfriend or a boyfriend, so I'm going to have them all shave their hair into the tonsure all throughout the world. I want all bishops to circulate this. That's a discipline. The Pope does have that kind of political authority. Orthodox don't like it that he does. He doesn't have a universal jurisdiction over all the other bishops as Bishop of Rome. Well, actually, he does. So that's good. Vatican I's cool with that. I'm a minimalist. I'm cool with that. But he doesn't need a doctrinal authority to say, oh, actually, Jesus didn't mean this. Papal maximalists want the Pope to have that. And there's no documents in Vatican I or II that really say that the Pope can be a revisionist historian with doctrine. Yeah, he can do whatever he wants with discipline. Yes, Trads got mad at me because I said this even means he can make the wrong prudential judgment call, like he did with Traditionis Custodis and his hatred of the Latin Mass and Latin Mass Catholics. Yeah, I'll brook that. I'll countenance that because that is a discipline. But what Francis is doing with doctrine is simply not allowed. And I think Francis was allowed by God, number 266, assuming he is Pope, to just call us back to that. Well, okay, he's trying to revise doctrine. He's trying to undo Jesus's direct teaching in several ways. And the Pope just can't do that any more than your bishop can. Papal minimalism. In that way, he's more like an ordinary bishop. He's not. He has a universal jurisdiction over discipline. He has a special teaching authority if it's a new area or a new mixture of interpretation of law and law, but he can't contradict Jesus. That's all it is. I think that's all it is, and that's why he doesn't even have the demands on his prudential decision-making that a king or a prince do. So I think that's why we have Francis. Functionality should always match telos. It means, a pope's functions should always match his goal. And his goal is really to just protect the teachings of Jesus and bring them unmolested into the new era. So this means he doesn't have the function of new doctrine maker. I think this is why all this is happening. Why would a pope need more than disciplinary emergency powers and some very limited explanatory doctrinal powers? He doesn't have that. Every appetite follows a function. Every function subserves the telos of whatever the thing is. The telos of the Pope is just to vouchsafe what Jesus left us. We're not, contrary to what a lot of Pope explainers think, we are not Pope worshipers. He's just the guardian making sure that there can't be change. He can't be the change agent. And I think that's why Francis was given to us. There's been a lot of debate from Vatican I through Vatican II, to what will probably eventually be Vatican III, which will be a combination of Lumen Gentium, whatever that paragraph is, which seems to expand on the Pope's authority. Is it Lumen Gentium 25? Which expands on the authority from Pastor Eternus in Vatican I. I think we're just like, now, this is what happens. Francis is what happens when Catholics get confused about papal maximalism. That's the white pill. And if he's not Pope, then none of that really is true, but we don't have to deal with any of his ugliness that he's cast on us anyway. Pray for the people of New York there. It's kind of their problem to deal with. I don't like seeing it any more than you, but don't stop acting surprised. Most likely, for 99% of you, your cardinal in your area is a bad guy, your archbishop, your bishop, they're one of them. Just deal with it. Most of you are not the sons of an Episcopal father who's a good guy. Some of you are. Some of you are lucky, but most of you aren't. Deal with it. Deal with reality. That's what adults do. God bless you all. Onward and upward. Deus vult.
No one is happy until they live in accordance with the natural law. And yet there seems to be nothing more dangerous than to describe what a woman truly is and ought to be. But let's give it a shot.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the